session number 8282, reel 4.
Mr. Dewfall, reel 4.
Yes, this poor old aeroplane, this Wellington, that it absolutely disintegrated in the air. It looked as though it had run into a shell or something. One felt sorry for the pilot, but that was the only plane of ours I saw shot down. And we had our fighters were Gloucester Gladiators, but we never had much Air Force. We never had much Tank Corps with us there, not in East Africa.
I think that you mentioned the Italian Patriots near Massawa. Did you have much contact with them? The Abyssinian Patriots?
Well, not a great deal. An incident happened down in Ambalalarge with the Abyssinian Patriots. They had a feeling that anybody white was Italian. And of course, when they come in contact with our white OP party, they started getting a little bit funny with them. And on one occasion, two of our chaps, I think it was Gordon Hodgson and a chap called Miles, I believe it was, and these patriots had taken these two chaps as prisoners, as thought, but they were maintaining the line between a gun position and the OP at Ambalalarge. And one of the signalers were coming down from the OP, following the line, and suddenly saw these two being lined up against a big block of stone and two patriots about to shoot him. So he put a round over the head of the two blokes and frightened the life out of them. They dropped their arms and held their arms up, and they wanted to shoot these people because they were Italians. They weren't Italians, they were two members of 5th Field Battery. But the ultimate outcome was that we had a job to tell them that they were all white people, weren't Italian people. And apparently what they were complaining about was that the Italians, after they'd taken over in 1936, had absolutely run rife through Eritrea, and there wasn't a woman safe to go with. That was their story, you know. And of course, whether you believe that or not, but that was how it was. And there was a story that a patriot came into the OP on one occasion, and he had something dragged round his neck that looked like the testicles of an Italian. They were a bloodthirsty lot. They were really tribesmen with a bandolier of ammunition round them and an antiquated old rifle. They were more like the Northwest Frontiers men, really, the Abyssinian Patriots. They were well to keep away from, not to get friendly with in any way. But none of them come in our gun position. But as I say, our OP had that experience. And was it Hodgson was coming down? There was two blokes maintaining the line, and one of the junior NCOs was coming back down from the OP. And when they come down from the OP is always the policy was to follow the line. Let the line run through your hand, because if there's any breakthrough shell fire, he can immediately join up and keep the OP in contact. And these other two lads were doing that up and down, but it was a bit of a problem, because these two nearly got shot with his patriot. Apparently they shifted them around about three times before they decided that was the wall they would shoot against, and that was where these two blokes would drop. Cool. They came in our gun position, these two lads, and they were as white as sheets. But yeah, it all turned out well for them in the long run.
Was that the only time you came across the Patriots?
That's the only time I heard of them or seen them. We saw them afterwards down at the disarmament parade. There was a lot of them down there. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if a lot of the rifles and things that were dropped down there most probably fell in the hands of these Abyssinian Patriots, because after the fall of Ambalalarge, 3rd Battery, or 3rd 57 Battery, I believe they went up to Gonda to finish off a few skirmishes up there, because there again, Patriots were up there causing a bit of trouble, and they went up to relieve the Itais to get them safely out. You know, it's always irony, isn't it, when you're shooting against an enemy and suddenly you've got to go and shoot somebody else to let the enemy get out. A little bit rough. But it didn't last long, a couple of days, and they were back again, rejoined us at Decamere. It wasn't all that bad a war, but as I say, it was hard, and the food was dog rough. It was you got nothing. Anything you could scrounge, or whenever you went over a battle area in a town, we didn't get a chance to look in the town of Kerrin for anything, because what we got at Brendel we'd used up. Then our next pickup was down at Ambalalagi, and we picked up a load of food stuff down there. We were warned to be careful with it, but it was all right. These Italians used to have a lot of this, what they call peach preserve. It's like a jam, but my God, it was delicious stuff to have with some bread. If you've got out some bread, you know, lashings of this on. It was quite useful.
What were relations like between the British soldiers on the one hand and the Indian and African soldiers on the other?
Well, I would say almost like blood brothers. You see, if you went into a battalion's lines, you weren't doing anything, or you were getting a bit of a break, and you bumped into a say the Gwalior's or the Baluchis or the Marathis, you were welcome. They always had a cup of tea for you, you know. The old saying was "Ek piala chai mongta," and you got a cup of tea from them. You know, it's always like that.
What does the saying mean?
Well, do you want a cup of tea? One cup of tea, you know, and they produce it. Even even on active service, if any of our OP went through their headquarters lines or their wagon lines where there was food being produced, they were always offered something. You know, they always said, "Do you want some grub or do you want some tea?" You know, and of course, most of our officers could speak reasonably fluent Urdu. I mean, the kind of Urdu I could speak was what we call soldiers Urdu, the stuff you pick up round and about, you know. But, no, they were pretty good. The troops got on well together. I always got the impression, though, that people in the United Kingdom thought that the 5th Indian Division, or the 4th Indian Division, or any of the Indian Divisions, were absolutely Indian troops. It's so wrong. Every artillery regiment is British. Nearly all the REs are British. You have what we call the Bombay Sappers and Miners. That was an Indian unit. But then you like your HLI and your West Yorks and your I forget who the other units were. Now. But there was I would say 50% of an Indian division was British troops. But they'd been out there so long. I mean, before the war, you went out, you could guarantee 6 years out there before ever you got a chance to come home. You went out in the winter, which meant you landed in India in the January or the February, which was the cool season, and you picked up the summer. And when you came back home, out of the winter season into the warmer season of UK. You got back about March, April. Consequently, if you tied on for 6 years, you didn't get back within 6.5 years, because that extra few months would bring you back into the United Kingdom while it was warm, giving you your bloody chance to sort of get acclimatised to the new country. But unfortunately, when we came home, that had all been shot to one side. It was a case of getting you back home when they could. And of course, I'd say I landed at Nova Scotia with about 6 inches of snow in near the Christmas time. We had a marvellous time there, though. We got well entertained by the Canadians in Nova Scotia. They made a lot of you and wanted to know about the things back home. Well, of course, you couldn't tell them much because you hadn't been home for 6 years yourself. They thought that you'd just come. The same applied when we were down in Clarewood Camp at Durban. You met the local populace there. They'd make the world of you. But they thought more of you with the brown knees than they did the one with the white knees, because the bloke with the brown knees, the sun-bronze people, had been up north and had come home. We're coming home. And they made a hell of a fuss of you. real fussy setup. You took out the tea, you had to go everywhere. People walk along the street and stop you. Oh, would you care to come and have tea with us? Will you come to dinner with us tonight? Do come along with us, you know. You boys are doing such grand jobs and all this nonsense. You felt like a little hero, and you hadn't done much, really. But you got looked after in South Africa, in Durban, and at Cape Town the same. But we're only a week in Cape Town.
Did you have anything to do with the King's African Rifles in East Africa?
Not as such, no. No.
What about contact with the civilians in Abyssinia and Eritrea? Did you have much contact with them?
I had no contact whatsoever with civilians in Abyssinia at all. Looked upon them as a load of tribesmen who lived in huts, and that was it. We never really stopped anywhere there, straight into Lambalalagi after the campaign, straight out and back to Dekamir, and we didn't see much of them, you know. The only time we come in contact with a civilian status was at Asmara, and even then you got on as well as language would permit you to get on, you know. It was terribly awkward trying to talk to an Italian bloke or woman. And then again, you never knew whether there was any undercurrent going on, because we were walking down through the main street of Asmara one night. There was four of us together. We had to go out in pairs, but there was four of us together. And all of a sudden, a shot whizzled over the top of our heads. Of course, we all dived for cover. And we realised that somebody in a flat over the way was shooting at us. It was only the one round come over, that's all. And we just stayed put where we were. I was halfway down a blooming flight of steps leading down to a door. And we were looking up, sort of wondering what was it. It was dark, it was night time. And, of course, immediately we went back and reported it, because we had a very strong element of military police in Asmara when they declared an open town. Well, the military police worked with the Italian police, who had interpreters as well. Well, so never as we caught one of the military coppers and told them that we'd been fired at, the civil police were there in no time as well, you know. They were up in that roof, routed somebody out, don't know who it was, we never saw them, but apparently they'd routed somebody out. Just small things, you know, you've forgotten about them until something like this crops up and makes you think back.
Was there much VD in Abyssinia and Eritrea?
Well, not amongst our particular lot. I don't know whether any other units are. They reckon it was rife, but I don't know. I don't know of anybody who had it. One of our chaps got it, don't we? Can't remember who it was. No, I don't think so. This Italian brothel that was open behind the metro in the main street there was a fantastic place, really. And the women, you couldn't but help admire. They were beautiful. As a matter of fact, one of them, right, she was almost a carbon copy of Alice Faye. She was a beautiful, you know, to see a blonde Italian woman is most unusual, isn't it? Because you're nearly all that. But she was beautiful, this girl. And I think there was eight girls in this place. And can you imagine a bloody division of... Oh, dear, dear, dear. Queuing up like a lot of animals. Hadn't seen white women for years, you know. She was all guilty of it, but there you are. But I don't know. I don't know if there was a lot of VD about her. I can't recall anybody suffering from the bloody disease. But what happened was, you see, there was a series of things used to happen. I remember on one regimental orders, started on a top of the order, bombed the default, promoted to sergeant, would affect so-and-so to hospital. And then sergeant default to bombardier, therefore, vice so-and-so from another unit. with a full scalp list, and I finished up with Bombardier down the bottom, and yet about 12 times I'd been up and down sergeant on this one publication of regimental orders, because regimental orders didn't come out every day. They came out over a period. I think actually over this period I'd been 2 months a sergeant, you know, and that's how the thing went on. Whether it was a case of somebody going in hospital with VD, I don't know. I think there seemed to be a lot about it, yet I can't really recall a lot about it. I remember when we came into Asmara, we were there, and there was a lot of talk about playing football. And being a regimental goalkeeper in a team, and 5th Battery having 8 of the regimental team in it, we played an Italian selected 11 on their football pitch down there. My God, you'd have never thought that they'd ever played football before. They practically killed us in it. If there's a dirtier footballer than Italian, I want to know who he is. He'd belt you, pull your shirt, he'd push you, he'd put both arms around your neck and pull you down. Cool. And we allowed them to have an Italian referee, you know, to sort of make it easy for them. And Gordon, we lost 4-1, I think, in that match. But the thing was, we hadn't been together for a team for a long time. Our last match was in 1939. We played no football at all since then. Timings and skills had gone. You know, it just wasn't a good match. But we'd done it to sort of... Well, I suppose the idea was that the division wanted somebody to sort of show the Italians we could play sport as well as we could fight, you know. Because, I mean, after all, we must have been proud of the fact that we got into their capital town and we'd beaten them all the way back and we were still going on to do this. I mean, the Italian in the town itself, I think he was really tickled when we came, because they could see the end of their own troops leaving them, see.
What songs did you sing in East Africa?
We don't know anything regimental and filthy, I suppose. You get the kind of songs that were coming out over the radio from time to time. Anne Shelton was very popular with her music, with her songs, My Yiddish and Mama and that kind of thing, and We'll Meet Again. Not so much Lily Marlene, not then. I don't think it was heard of at that time, was it? Or was it? It might have been. We put on a cabaret show in the Metro Theatre in Asmara, and it was a divisional effort. For the 3 weeks we were there, it was marvellous, you know. And, you know, a comedian and a joker and a singer and somebody playing a bit of music or something. But the one act I well remember, General Platt, who was the CAID. Now, the CAID stood for King's Advisor in Defence of the whole of East Africa. Now, he sat in the front row, and a little comedian from the West Yorks, and he's telling a story. And the story he told that day, but he said, our Willie went up to join up the other day. He said, he got up to the recruiting office, and the recruiting officer said to him, you're too small to join the army. So our Willie was very clever. He turned round and said to him, what do you want for a bob a day, Platt? Of course, the general thought that was great. He really laughed his head off. But this was the kind of thing, you put a show together, you know, you get a couple of blokes dressed up as a woman doing a woman's act, and that. You get somebody else doing a bit of tap dancing or something. But it was a break. We'd come back. We'd had 3 weeks respite here. And we knew we were going to have a fortnight, but they thought, well, we've got to do something to entertain the division. And we held this blooming great Metro Theatre, and they put this show on, and it was a marvellous do. There might have been one or two personalities from show business, but nothing great. You know, nothing really big. But...